And shall we observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to the Public Service Commission. We have received the apology from the chair, Commissioner Nzimande, who will be joining us. She's on her way here. I'd like to greet the staff members, stakeholders, and all guests. You are all welcome. I wish to welcome you all to this important meeting. It is a very important meeting where we will be receiving a briefing from the Public Service Commission on the 2017 Appropriation Bill. The PSC is an important and valued partner to the Appropriations Committee as we work together to ensure that we maximize the socio-economic benefits of the scarce resources available to our people. Previous inputs from the PSC, such as managing personnel spending, improving financial management in government departments, improving the management of government property, including cost containment targets in apps, in APPs, not apps, sorry. I'm not performance plan, but we can easily make this mistake, apps, you know. And many others. We agreed to by committee and recommendations in these areas made to and accept by the government. Indeed, the committee recommendations have been acknowledged by the government as comprehensive and valuable. Well, thanks to your invaluable contributions. We face difficult times, and the allocation of our limited resources demands the greatest care and research-backed evidence to ensure that we approve budgets that are transformative and lead to a people-centered public service. With these few words, I really want you to relax and feel so much at home. And let's have open and free engagement. We're also looking forward to innovative ideas. We keep talking about the NDP, talking about us also having to use innovation. So we're looking forward to innovative ideas for effective budget allocation. Let's have some fruitful deliberations. I thank you. The next item on the agenda is apologies. Shall we get the apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, guests, and honorable members. We received two apologies for today's meeting. The first one is from Mr. Sheikh Imam. The second one is from Ms. Ntlangwini. They are both attending portfolio committee meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. I know I have received an apology from... Did you mention? Okay. Mrs. Nukwanyana is on sick leave. She had an operation. She underwent an operation, an eye operation. And then I'm sure she'll be joining us next week. So she will not be here for the rest of the week. We will then move on to item number. I just want to check. Okay, because I thought you were not inviting him. All right, we are now on item number 3, which is presentation by Public Service Commission. I will now hand over to the Public Service Commission to give us a brief or their comment on the 2017 Appropriations Bill. And honourable members, let's listen carefully and thereafter interrogate the presentation. Over to you, madam. If you can introduce yourself so that, yeah.
Thank you very much, honourable chair, and good morning, honourable members. As I've already indicated, please accept our apologies for Commissioner Nzimande. She is on her way, just a few challenges at the airport this morning, but she is en route. I'm Carmen Domingo-Swart. I'm the director within the Office of the Public Service Commission, responsible for institutional evaluations. And with me, I have our parliamentarian representative, Nordzi. And we are so grateful for this opportunity. Coming to present to SCOA has become one of our governance responsibilities, and it is definitely part of what we feel is important for the Commission. So I'm going to start going through the presentation as provided to the members. This is just basically an outline. I apologize for not looking at you. It's a bit difficult this morning. In terms of the presentation outline, I will present on the mandate. Just give you an overview in terms of the areas of oversight that is the responsibility of the Commission, as well as the outputs of our oversight function. Then there were a list of questions that were posed by the committee, and we have prepared some responses in terms of it. Some closing remarks, and at the back, we have included the Annexure A, which is basically the budget versus the performance for the national department. One of the key recommendations that came from this committee, I think almost 2 years ago, and we've made sure that we've included it in all our presentation. Please just note that we did present on these budget and performance information in our presentation to the committee on the 8th of November as the new annual reports for 2016-17 will only be available in August-September of this year. So just in terms of our mandate, the Public Service Commission's priorities are based on our constitutional imperative of oversight. In executing our mandate, the Commission obviously takes cognizance of all the governance documents. For example, we look at the parliamentarian resolution, we look at the State of the Nation address, we look at the cabinet mandate, as well as the National Development Plan. We also take into consideration the outputs approach as developed by government, which provides a framework for us to assist in the priorities and the strategic development. In particular, we focus on outcome 12, which is looking into an effective, efficient, effective, and developmental orientated public service. Apart from its key priorities, the Public Service Commission continues to engage with the executive authorities, the HODs, the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, as well as planning, monitoring, and evaluation, and all other stakeholders on our report so that we can ensure that the recommendations that we made are actually implemented. And the one recommendation that we are really focusing on currently is the recommendations made in terms of the work that we've done on a developmental state report on professionalizing the public service. In terms of our areas of oversight, it is in the investigation, monitoring, and evaluation. We say that the constitutional oversight mandate of the Public Service Commission is very wide, and we've just tried to summarize it to indicate, you know, some of the key areas that we are focusing on. And the first one is organization of the public service, where we look at the organizational arrangements of the departments in the public service. Administration of the public service, looking into the procedures, the policy framework, accountability mechanisms that are in place that basically ensures the functioning of the public service. We look into personnel practices, where our main focus is on recruitment, transfer, promotions, and dismissals. The adherence to applicable procedures in the public service, here we focus on compliance issues to the letter and in the spirit of the prescribed rules, policies, and procedures. And then ultimately, the extent to which the values and the principles set out in Section 195 of the Constitution are complied with. In terms of our output, we provide advice on our own accord or on request from of any complaint from the national or provincial organs of state regarding personnel practices in the public service, including those relating to the recruitment, appointment, transfer, discharge, and other aspects of careers of employees in the public service. We also provide recommendations in terms of appropriate remedies relating to the resolution of grievances. Also make recommendations to the executive authorities to act in terms of specific provisions of the Public Service Act or any law in resolving a particular grievance, and we make proposals in terms of measures that should be put in place to ensure effective and sufficient efficient performance within the public service. And lastly, we provide direction, and the direction is aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures relating to recruitment, transfer, promotions, and dismissals are complied with in terms of the values and the principles set out in Section 195 to ensure compliance with the Public Service Act and in order to provide advice to promote sound public administration. These directions that we provide are binding on the executive authorities or the head of departments, as the case might be, and should be implemented within 30 days of the of the receipt of these directions. What do we report on? We report on our activities and the performance of our function, including any finding we have made and direction, advice given, and to provide an evaluation of the extent to which the values and the principles set out in Section 195 are complied with. This is done on an annual basis to the National Assembly as well as the provincial legislatures. We also provide a report to the relevant authorities, executive authorities, and the legislature in terms of investigations undertaken, evaluations on the application of the personnel and public administration practices. So that in a nutshell is just to, on a practical level, how we have translated our mandate into actionable actions that we measure ourselves on. The presentation will now cover the areas as requested by the committee, which starts with an overall just general comments on the appropriation, but keeping in mind that we have provided comments in relation to our mandate, an assessment of strategies available in terms of improving administration practices, the different efficiencies, effectiveness, and the value for money regarding the budget allocation for 2017. Also, the governance aspects that we have been presenting on for the last 3 years to the committee, looking at what measures should be put in place to improve systems of governance as well as in terms of improving performance and service delivery. Then Annex A, as I've already indicated, presents the last 3 financial years' budgets versus performance for focus specifically on the national departments. We then look at the effective and efficient performance within the public service, going into detail, looking at how we are performing in terms of the National Development Plan, identify and discuss government programs wherein major efficiencies and savings are possible, and some additional comments in terms of the process. Just to give you an indication of what information that we have used, we have obviously used all the annual reports of the national departments, and as already indicated, we will just reflect on presenting the performance and the expenditures just a little bit different in terms of 2015-16, as that information has been already presented to the committee. Other data that we have used is our databases available within the commission, research reports, fact sheets, the latest consolidated report of the AG of South Africa, and then information regarding the management performance assessment tool that was undertaken by DPME. Okay. This is sort of a disclaimer, and I think some of your honorable members will recognize it. Just to say that we don't really have comprehensive research that we've conducted in all areas that the committee has requested information on, but we have done our best to make sure that we, at the receipt of requests, at least undertake a little bit of research to make sure that we bring new comments. We have built a data sourcing and analytical capability within our organization, but our frame of reference is obviously the nine values and principles, and that is within the context that we provide our comments. Government spending plans remain focused on achieving the objectives of the MTSS, seen as a vehicle to drive the implementation of and the achievement of the National Development Goals. The priorities highlighted in the 2017 budget remains on education and health, with a renewed focus on social services and law enforcement, and a specific focus on higher education and economic transformation. We don't go into the detail of this prioritization. We don't have an opinion on that, but we have made some recommendations in terms of how do we actually focus our attention and resources on these areas. In terms of our general comments, in terms of the appropriation bill in relation to our mandate, we've indicated that National Treasury continues to place a ceiling on the wage bill, which has resulted in a temporary stabilization currently, which everybody is very happy about. But we're wanting to make sure that we should continuously just have some oversight in terms of the measures put in place to achieve the stabilization and how it basically impacts on the overall performance of the departments. National Treasury continues also to require departments to review their developed human resources plans to ensure that departments stay within that ceiling. However, the higher than inflation wage settlements will, however, place renewed pressure on the wage bill, and the departments will need to devise innovative ways to execute their mandate with limited resources. I think it goes back to what the chairperson also indicated in terms of how do we, you know, what are the innovative interventions that we can actually put in place to make sure that there's some balance between, you know, making sure that we manage our resources and manage the money versus making sure that we still perform and deliver services. The next slide basically focuses on anti-corruption, where we state that public servants need to be held to a higher standard of professionalism because they serve the public interest and we use public money. The public interest should always come first, with zero tolerance to corrupt activities. Such high standards of integrity and commitment necessitates ethical leadership of the highest caliber. Continuously, as you've seen over the last 3 years, this is something that we've emphasized within our presentation, the importance of ethical leadership and taking ownership and accountability for these areas. Other interventions to curb corruption, including resuscitating the National Anti-Corruption Forum, led by the Minister of Public Service and Administration and the Public Service Commission. The finalization of the National Anti-Corruption Strategy that should include both the private and the public sector which is led by the Interministerial Committee on Anti-Corruption. Those within the context of our mandate are definitely areas that need the attention in terms of this committee, in terms of oversight and keeping departments accountable. The next three slides will focus on the strategies available to significantly improve administration practices in the public service. And again, you will see that what we have highlighted is four strategic areas, or four areas, starting with strategic management. What is of most importance, and what was also found to be still lacking within DPME's 2016 results, impact results, is that the translation of strategic plans into actionable annual performance plans is still a challenge for some departments. This includes there is some misalignment in terms of the strategic objectives. When you look at these two documents, they don't always speak to each other. And this is mainly because departments are not adhering to the framework that was developed by National Treasury for strategic for the development of strategic plans and annual performance plans. That clearly shows how this information needs to be translated and what should be in place to make sure that there's clear linkages between these two documents. Improve ability to effectively monitor and report against reliable performance information produced by the department. This includes the usage of this information to inform inform performance improvements. So ultimately, there should be a reiterative process of making sure that the previous year's performance should inform what we plan for and what we prioritize for the next financial year. Within the challenges of available budgets and the allocation of the different budgets and the budget cuts, something that is very, very important is the alignment of the budget with the annual performance plans. We still need to make sure what is possible, and it's clear that the departments are not making this alignment between the budgets allocated and what they need to focus on within the specific financial year. Something that we feel would definitely help is that there should be some costing of the implementation. So we need to understand what is it we're going to do and what is the cost. Not just the cost for goods and services, but what is the human resource cost relating to the implementation of that strategic objective. The second area is governance and accountability, and an area that has been a challenge over the last 3 years is the adherence to the service delivery improvement policy, where there should be an approved service delivery charter, which clearly defines the standards and have measurable standards in place and an improved service delivery improvement plan. In most cases, we see that departments will have the service delivery improvement plan, which is unfortunately just malicious compliance, but they don't really translate that plan into what are the things that people should be expecting, what are the standards, and where can people actually go to if these standards are not met. An area of concern is also that certain departments have not built the required anti-corruption capacity in order to deal with these matters swiftly within the department. And then the established systems and policies to promote professional ethics and discourage unethical behavior, measuring treatment of citizens and corruption. So we have no consequent management in this area. And what National Treasury has done is they've indicated that we should do a bit of an annual reflection through an annual survey undertaken by different departments, and it's clear that the departments are not adhering to this. So they have no idea what is happening and what people's perceptions are within the department relating to unethical behavior. The next slide goes into the human resource management area. That has been further divided into three categories, one being the recruitment and selection. As previously indicated, the Public Service Commission has done a discussion document on building a professional and career-orientated public service that gives a problem statement regarding the current recruitment and selection systems in place and where we recommend that better career management should be put in place. And what does this actually mean? We are saying that there should be better specification in terms of the requirements and the scope of work for the different careers. So we really need to understand what we need and make sure that we actually appoint people that can deliver against those requirements. We need to certify those candidates to ensure that they can actually do the work that is required in terms of the scope of the work that this position requires of them, and recruiting from a pool of skills that has been built over a period of time. So making sure that we have the capacity to do what we need to do. The second category is organizational design, and this is a big challenge currently in some in departments, where departments are changing their organizational structures without consultation with the Department of Public Service and Administration, which is a big challenge, because what we are seeing is that these changes in the structures has resulted in the non-alignment with the MTES budget. So these things are not speaking to each other and has financial implications, obviously, for the department, which is not managed appropriately. Lastly, for this area is management of disciplinary cases. We need to address the challenges with the finalization of the disciplinary cases within the 90 days from identification, to address the personnel shortage in the labor relations unit. The Department of Public Service and Administration have created a pool of resources for the departments to use on request. A lot of the departments have indicated that they are not complying with the 90 days because of unavailability of staff members to actually sit and deliberate on these cases. And this is no longer an excuse that can be used by the departments, because there is a pool of resources available. All they have to do now is tap into this resource, and these people that have been put into this pool is people that have the relevant qualifications and capability to assist the departments. The final category for this area is then financial management, which is obviously very important for this committee, is that we need to improve the compliance with the legislative requirements for the payment of suppliers within the 30 days of receipt of invoice. Again, we're highlighting that there's no consequence management in this area. We have heard that the departments have developed flow charts in terms of, so that everybody could understand what is the process that needs to be followed in terms of paying these invoices. Other departments have developed alerting systems to alert them if an invoice is close to being seen as not being paid within these 30 days, and yet nothing happens. We have these systems in place. We've spent money. Consultants have come in. They've developed these systems for us. We've done training with all officials, but still we are not seeing the return on investment in this area. We have also, in terms of governance, required the development of various policies and procedures that needs to be in place. And we've seen, when we look at the numbers, which will come a little bit later in this presentation, you know, we're still not seeing the return. So documenting the policies and procedures for the management of unauthorized and irregular, fruitful and wasteful expenditure to detect and prevent the occurrence and take disciplinary actions against negligent officials is still very important. Like we said, we have all these things in place, but we are not calling people to task. We are not making sure that the accountability measures that we've put in place are actually doing what they are supposed to do. The next area is the efficiencies, effectiveness, and value for money with regard to the 2017 budget vote allocation. As I've already indicated, when you look from slide 47, you will see that we have included in the pack the slides that we presented to this committee on the 8th of November. But the next few slides just provides a little bit of a different picture to the information already presented. This slide is just to give you an indication for the last three financial years how we have performed as national departments, and you can clearly see that in 2015-16 that there has been a decline in the achievement of 80% and above of the predetermined targets achieved by the department from the 37.8% in the financial year 2014-15. So it is quite a reduction in terms of that. And then obviously we've seen an increase in the performance between 50% to 79% of predetermined targets. So there has been a decrease in that. Some could say that this is as a result of cost-cutting measures and the innovative ways that departments have made sure that they fall within the wage bill in terms of dealing with headcount. We are definitely, it's clear that we are seeing it in our performance for the previous financial year 15-16. Just to focus on a few of these departments that have performed below a 50% in terms of achieving their predetermined targets, and yet they have spent above 80% of their budget. We have a Department of Energy that we've just shown you a little bit of a trend in terms of the three financial years, and you can clearly see that over the last 3 years they have achieved under the 50%, and overall they have spent almost 100% of their budget. Only for 14-15 they spend at 83.6%. Then we have Department of Women. For the last two financial years, you can clearly see that although that there is an improvement in terms of the performance for 2015-16, it is still below 50%. Then we have Department of Water and Sanitation showing basically the same trend. One that is very is noteworthy for us is the decline of performance of civilian secretaries for police that achieved a 79.6% in the financial year 2013-14, and in the financial year 2015-16 have only achieved 48.5%. So they have been performing in the region of over 90% in the achieving of their predetermined targets. And for 2015-16, there was a dramatic reduction in the achievement of their predetermined objectives. We must also note that there's a lot of movement in this department in terms of the vacancy rate also, but also in terms of a lot of cost-cutting measures. The percentage of planned outputs achieved can be increased by proper target setting, redesigning delivery models and processes, and by performance management. It's very important, as already indicated, that departments really reflect on the budget allocated and really look at what is practical in terms of achieving, and not just going on as they have been over the last 5 years in terms of just adding more targets and not realistically looking at what is possible within the context of their resources, not just human but as well as budget. Performance management should be improved on both an organizational level as well as an individual staff assessment level. This is also one area that we have previously presented to the committee members, to say that organizational performance and the individual performance should speak to each other. We cannot have a department where people are receiving performance bonuses and yet a department is not achieving its predetermined objectives. On an organizational level, it is about better measurement for unit performance and appropriate management action in terms of cases of poor performance. Again, it speaks to the consequent management and making sure that if you are not contributing in the area that you are supposed to, that there is some intervention in terms of making sure that performances are improved. Appropriate management action includes consequence management of poor performance, but even more importantly, giving managers the authority and the means to take all necessary steps to improve performance. In our discussion document, as already indicated, we have again given a problem statement on performance management, and we've recommended, and something that we would like to repeat to the committee, is that we've recommended that a comprehensive review of the performance management and accountability framework should be undertaken. We have the system in place, and yet never has the system been evaluated to really understand, are we achieving what we have set out in terms of the objectives, and is it really making a difference and addressing the problem area for the reason why we decided to put this framework in place. The next area is an update in terms of the filling of performance agreements, basically just looking at the DGs and the HODs on provincial level that have submitted their performance agreements. Previously, this was submitted to the Public Service Commission, and now it's being submitted to DPME, and this is basically the information as provided by DPME, and we also, unfortunately, some of the departments are still submitting it to us as well, so we also have our verified database to update the information against what DPME is reporting. So since 2014-15, the submission rate of a very shocking 18%, there has been significant improvement in the submission of performance agreements. A lot of people have attributed the 18% to the confusion of where the agreement should actually be submitted, whether DPME or whether the Public Service Commission. But we can definitely see after that there has been a significant increase in terms of the submission. Although we would want to have 100% coming from an 18%, this was quite a good increase in terms of the submission, but we still would like for us to encourage departments and to make sure that there's some consequence management in terms of the HODs and the DGs that do not comply with this, that there is some consequent management in place. Okay. The next area is the payment of invoices, as previously alluded to in terms of the strategies in place. In November, when we presented to the committee, we only had information on January and February for the financial year 2016-17, and now we have a full year picture. So that dramatic increase is just based on the fact that we now have a year picture in terms of the number of invoices that were paid after 30 days, which is still a lot, as you can see. But what is of most concern is the number of invoices that are older than 30 days which have not been paid. And if we look at the detail in terms of the departments that are contributing to this high number is the Department of Public Works and then Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries. In terms of the cost, we can definitely see that there was a reduction if we look at the previous slide in terms of the number of invoices older than 30 days not paid. We can see that there has been a huge reduction in the cost of invoices. And based on our analysis, this could be as a result of the fact that departments are making sure that they pay those invoices with the highest amounts that is due to the suppliers. So all these smaller amounts are paid a little bit later. But it is still a lot of money because it is 1.3 billion rand. In terms of our invoices paid after 30 days, it is still a lot of money as we can see, which can definitely benefit our service delivery if we make sure that this is managed adequately. The other contributing factor in terms of the previous slide in terms of the numbers as well as the cost. It could be attributed to the establishment of the unit in the DPME as presented to you in November. The DPME have established a unit that specifically looks at this and is working very closely with National Treasury in terms of making sure that departments are really putting pressure on their finance components to make sure that these things happen in terms of supply chain management within the departments. And if there's an area that is flagged or highlighted by National Treasury, this unit actually goes to the department to understand what are the problems and what how they can basically assist in this area. Okay. We have also looked, and this is also one of the areas that the committee has requested of, I think, 2 years ago that we include in the presentation, is the cost of consultants. This is from the latest consolidated report from the AG for 2015-16, and we have focused again on only the three areas as highlighted previously to the committee, and we can see that there is a reduction in terms of the cost for these related areas in terms of financial reporting services and the preparation of performance information as well as IT services. There's clearly a reduction in the cost for these areas for the financial year 15-16. However, when we look at the consolidated report from the AG, he still highlights as areas of concern the poor financial reporting and management, as well as the preparation of performance information in departments. So if we've had consultants in our departments for almost 2 to 3 years assisting the department in these areas, it's clear that there was no transfer of skills done by these consultants during those two financial years when they were in the department and receiving that amount of money. What is also a concern is although there is a reduction, which is still a lot of money if we look at it, although there is a reduction in these areas, it is concerning that these are basically core functions within the department that's being outsourced. So it's clear that as national departments, we do not have the required skill or a capacity for us to deliver on what is our mandate. The next slide, we've just basically updated the information in terms of the number of consultants. There was a decline in the number of consultants used based on the information as provided in the table below. The table below comprised the department that previously reported to this committee with significant cost incurred for the use of consultants with the latest information that we've updated for 15-16. Areas of concern, which we would like to highlight, is the Department of Defense, DPME, and DPSA. We can definitely see in terms of DPME as well as DPSA the increase in the number of consultants and subsequently the cost related to the increase in the numbers, as well as although Environmental Affairs shows a reduction in the number of consultants being utilized, there is a significant increase in terms of the cost of consultants. So the emphasis was placed on departments have to reduce the number of consultants that they're using. So now they're using less consultants but still spending more money. The second is just also another update, and the areas of concern is Department of International Relations, as well as telecommunications and postal services. You can see telecommunications and postal services. Initially in 14-15, there was 9 consultants. And when you look at the latest, it is 253, which is a major, major, major jump. So that is basically the areas, as well as water and sanitation, which had already a high number of consultants being utilized, which is 115, and it increased to 377. The next few slides will look at the governance issues. So what can be done to ensure that government's measures to improve the overall systems of governance are successful? We look at the following areas: the audit outcomes, the financial misconduct, and precautionary suspension. The latest audit outcomes for 15-16 shows a slight improvement in the audit results of national and provincial departments. However, these are some of the departments that still raise a concern. And something that is new in the consolidated report provided by the AG is where an audit has not been finalized in terms of certain departments. I know that we did, the DG of the Office of the Public Service Commission presented to the committee in November the challenge that was experienced with the Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of questioning the results of the AG and what not willing to sign off the results. In this case, we have four departments who did not finalize their audit process with the AG at the time. And just to give you an indication, all annual reports should be finalized by the end of May. This audit process is then undertaken and is finalized mid-August, and by the time they were ready to print the findings, this process was still not finished. And the main reasons for not completing of the audit process was the non-submission or the late submission of financial statements as well as annual reports, and then the disagreements on accounting matters to the extent of taking the AG to court. Just an area that we would like to highlight is to say that the Department of Cooperative Governance audit was completed on the 9th of September due to delays to conclude on a fraud risk detected during the audit. And they received a qualified audit with findings. Noteworthy areas of concern is that the Departments of Education, Health, and Public Works, responsible for 37% of the budget, continue to have poor outcomes. Something that that is new in our presentation is the state-owned entities, and we're saying that the financial sustainability of the state-owned entities remains a concern, as highlighted by the AG. Uncertainties about the ability of some of these entities to continue operations delayed the audit. As evidence was needed to report them as an ongoing concern. The operations and the audit outcomes were negatively affected by the weaknesses in the leadership, the governance, such as instability at board level, vacancies in key positions, inadequate consequent management, and poor monitoring and oversight of finance, performance management, and major procurement processes. The final slide in terms of the audit findings is the area that shows no improvement was the audit opinion on financial statements and the poor quality of financial statements which were submitted raises concerns about the in-year reporting and management of finances. And in our current climate in government and in terms of especially the appropriation and allocation of budget, this is something that we can't afford. We need to make sure that the money allocated is managed properly. And if these are some of the issues that we are experiencing, it is something that is of great concern in terms of proper financial management. There's also been an increase in irregular expenditure, mainly due to the non-compliance with supply chain management. And again, this is an area that we have highlighted so many times. There's so many additional resources. When departments have submitted requests for additional resources in the departments, they would use improving this compliance as a reason for getting more warm bodies in the department, and yet we are still not seeing the return of this investment. This represents the expenditure incurred towards procurement of goods and services without following the prescribed processes. The signs of poor performance management are the increased occurrence of the shortfalls, the department's funding, cash flow shortfalls, so already using this financials allocation for the next financial year, poor revenue management and inability to pay creditors within the required 30 days. So all the shortfalls that we've already highlighted for the MTEF starting from 17-18 will definitely increase if we look at areas like this, because we are in this financial year already spending the money that has been allocated for the 18-19 financial year. The next area is financial misconduct. And there, when you look at this graph, there's a clear indication of the huge decline in the finalized cases of financial misconduct reported by national departments. It basically reflects a minus 42% in terms of the reduction. Departments with the highest number of completed cases are Department of Police, Defense and Public Works, as well as Department of Correctional Service. Departments with the lowest number of completed cases are Arts and Culture, Civilian Secretariat for Police, Independent Police Investigative Directorate, Mineral Resources, Public Enterprises, State SA, Transport, and Women. All these departments reported only one case finalized each. In terms of what it costs us in this financial misconduct cases, we have left the four-year trend just to give an indication. Since 2012-13, there has been a gradual decline in the percentage not recovered. So from a 33% to a noteworthy 12.2% of the total amount involved in the financial misconduct. So that is a better picture, but this is definitely an area in terms of finalizing these cases that we need to work on. Just to zoom in a little bit, in terms of the financial misconduct, the table below highlights departments where amounts not recovered are over 1 million for the financial year 2015-16, and then we have Labor and Department of Defense that have reported above 1 million. And this picture is actually showing us some improvement, because in our previous presentation, in terms of financial year 2014-15, we highlighted six departments that reported amounts not recovered over 1 million, and now we have two departments. Just to highlight that defense and labor were part of the six departments that we reported in the financial year 2014-15 as having not recovered the amounts over 1 million. In terms of precautionary suspensions, as we always say, it's a good indicator of the health of the HR administration in the department. And we did see some movement, some improvements in certain areas. For 2015-16, it reflects a small reduction in the number of people suspended, and there is a notable increase in the number of people who have been suspended for more than 60 days, including a significant increase in terms of the average days of people that are suspended. It doesn't look like a lot, but there is some increases in terms of people that are suspended over 60 days and then on also the average days. So the average days for 2014-15 was 128, and then for 2015-16 it's 160. And if you look at those figures, it doesn't look like a lot until you look at what it costs us. So the first 3 years show a downward trend in terms of what these suspensions have cost us. However, 2015-16 reflects a significant increase in the cost of suspension. So we have from 31 million in 2014-15 to a 54 million in 2015-16. Apologies for the mistake there. So the 54 million is not 2014-15, but 2015-16. So as I say, when we look at the numbers, it doesn't look that bad, but when you look at the cost, it is quite a significant increase. This increase is generally in terms of when you engage with the department and you ask them why this increase in terms of the numbers, they indicate that most of the people that have been suspended are on SMS levels, and that's why the cost incurred is higher. Again, just zooming in a little bit, looking at who are the departments that contribute mainly to those numbers, and I think this is exact picture of what we presented last in November in terms of the Department of Police, Justice and Constitutional Development, and Defense. Mainly contributing. Although we do see a decline in the Department of Police, it is still the main contributor to the number of suspensions. Okay. Allow me just to have some water, please. Okay, so now we move over to the next area, effective and efficient performance within the public service. And like I've indicated, in terms of looking at how we're contributing to the National Development Plan. And I want to say that for the committee members, it might look like a repeat of a few presentations, but unfortunately, our picture has not changed. These are still the areas that are really contributing to our levels of performance in service delivery. The importance of the improvement of coordination and collaboration cannot be stressed enough. We have the required intergovernmental relations structures in place for coordination, integration, and alignment across the spheres of government, yet it's still these two concepts still remain a big challenge within government. As previously indicated, there should be a review of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act to address the distribution and the allocation of powers and the functions within and across the spheres of government. In terms of this area, we have also looked at the vacancy rate for national departments. One of the biggest challenges for national government is to attract and retain qualified and competent persons in all areas of administration. As per the National Development Plan, there is unevenness in the capacity that leads to unevenness in terms of the performance in the public service. The latest information that we have was as at December 2016, overall there's a vacancy rate within the public service of 11.22%. which is still above the norm, 10%. Of the 43 national departments, a total of 22 departments have a vacancy rate above the 10% norm. Areas of concern is where departments have a vacancy rate of above 20%. We've highlighted five departments there. As you can see, human settlements, sport and recreation, water and sanitation, and transport. And in In the case of communication, although there is an improvement from the previous year, which was at 25%, as reported in the annual report of 2015-16, as at December 2016, they reported a 20.51% vacancy rate. Trying to understand why these high numbers of vacancy rates, as indicated in the beginning of this presentation, the biggest challenge of departments not consulting with DBSA in terms of the changing of their structures, the ongoing restructuring over long periods and the delays in the finalization of the approved organizational structures. So as we've already indicated, what happens is departments change their structure without consultation and they just submit to the department to approve the structure, and that takes long because the department, DBSA, was not aware of these changes that are being, that is occurring within the department. Also, the moratorium basically on all the filling of posts that were in place for extensive periods. And in most cases, especially on provincial level, this was to make sure that there's some monitoring and oversight in terms of costs spent in terms of recruitment and selection. Also, the lack of delegation in some departments to fill posts that often result in a lengthy approval process. Delays in the finalization of the prescript pre-employment verification on the part of SAQWA in terms of the educational qualifications, as well as the State Security Agency in respect to the other pre-qualification requirements. Another key area that affects performance is the provision of reasonable functional accommodation that facilitates service delivery. And this is the responsibility of the Department of Public Works. Departments have raised the maintenance of buildings and the management of lease contracts as a persistent problem. The Department of Public Works has indicated that they that there's a lack of delivery, and this is mainly because of the contractual and labor disputes. And for us as the Public Service Commission, we have this question that do they have the capacity to really deliver on their key function? Okay. So now we have identified, we would like to discuss some of the government programs wherein major efficiencies and savings are possible. National departments have not adjusted operations to reflect allocated budgets. As I've indicated when it came to the strategic management, in terms of not making sure that the allocated budget is aligned with the annual performance plans. And in some cases, we still have departments that are continuing with the recruitment processes even though they don't have the money to compensate. This means that the initial shortfall for 2017-18 will be even larger, and it will be difficult to sustain the headcount for the next three financial years. In the meantime, what has been happening, and as reported at Foresight earlier in May, is that National Treasury, in collaboration with the Department of Public Service and Administration, will be developing guidelines for departments on the management of headcount. So just making sure that people understand, yes, finding a balance between our cost-cutting measures and making sure that we have the resources needed in terms of operations. There's also the implementation of the human resource budget plans, a tool that was developed and is being introduced by National Treasury, just to get a grip on the numbers and to provide input into the budget processes. So these two, the guidelines as well as the plans tools, will work hand in hand. And the idea is that this will assist the departments in better planning between the finances and human resources. then corruption undermines good governance, legitimacy, and the credibility of the state. Sound and functional institutions, as well as effective operation of government. It further hampers the development efforts. Therefore, there is a need to continuously promote ethical conduct in the public sector. One step that government has taken is to bar public service employees from doing business with government and other organs of state. And obviously, when such a regulation is put in place, there is time allowed for transition, and this period has basically ended end of January of this year. And this means that from February 2017, those public servants who were conducting business with an organ of state should have resigned from either the businesses or from the public service. DPSA is currently working on collecting information on public service employees who fail to comply with this new regulation, and upon completion, disciplinary processes will be instituted against those who fail to comply. So we reckon that DPSA will ensure that information reaches all the required role players and stakeholders in terms of making sure that is managed and that some sort of a consequent management process is in place.
Just for clarity, should that have read 2016, 31 January? Previous slide?
Previous slide? No, 2017.
So it's only at the end of this year?
Yes. So by the end of the time period ended the beginning of this year. So when it came to effect,
so
they were...
So it should be 2016.
No, 2017. So from 2017 February, they are checking if people have resigned. Because this is the regulation, is the 2016, the new 2016 public service regulation.
Yeah, but there you're saying that the declared activities under the 2006 public service regulation ended 31 January 2017. That's only in a few months' time. 31.
No.
I've got it wrong. Sorry, no. Quite right. My head's somewhere else.
No.
Apologies.
Thank you. Okay, just in terms of the picture of the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, it is a bit of a concerning slide, as you can see. When you look at the backlog, there's definitely an increase in the backlog for 2016-17. With an 89.9% backlog on the cases, on the NAC cases. And you can see the amount of feedback that we received has gradually, significantly declined from 13-14 cases finalized and cases closed, which is the green, for the last two financial years is really a concern for us. And definitely an area that we need to understand, because this is one of the areas that, as we've indicated earlier, is that there should be the prerequisite resources in place to actually manage these cases. Going on in terms of looking at government programs, within the current economic climate, it is essential that government review and assess the impact of the establishment of agencies and the public and private partnerships. These are some of the issues that we need to understand. Is we need to understand the impact on the fiscus in terms of all related costs for these agencies and for these partnerships. The cost of the specific public and private partnership, for example, the Albert Sisulu Hospital that we've mentioned here, is modeled, but not the financial implications for the budget for all the other hospitals. So when we look at these partnerships, we tend to focus only on the area where we want to establish the partnership and not really understanding the full picture. So what we're doing is we're creating a Rolls-Royce for one hospital to the detriment of the other. Agency mandates in relation to the department mandates. Are these agencies actually delivering the constitutional mandates and implementing the functions of the departments? And what is our return on investment when we are establishing these agencies and these public and private partnerships? Really understand the amount of money that we're giving and what we are getting out of these two programs. The public service has recently undertaken inspections at various border posts, and our aim there was to assess the service delivery and the infrastructural challenges. And when we presented the findings of our inspections, the Department of Home Affairs indicated that the establishment of the border management agency, they see that as a solution to the challenges being experienced at the border post. These inspections undertaken by the Public Service Commission found that there was generally poor process flow and movement controls at the site and a lack of coordination between the departments. According to the Department of Home Affairs, the establishment of the Border Management Agency will have the authority for the operation of all ports of entry and all the functions of the different departments at the ports of entry. This means that all the departmental roles at the ports of entry will be transferred to this new agency. The department has indicated that they've conducted a feasibility study on the technical infrastructure and physical design of the ports of entry and found that a public-private partnership are a means to resolve the design problems being experienced at the ports of entry. They've also indicated that there will be six public-private partnerships that will commence at these 6 points in 2018. The reality is that this border management agency will increase the public service wage bill, and there will be no guarantees that it will resolve the challenges in terms of coordination and other issues being experienced by these boards will be addressed. So that stabilized wage bill as presented earlier, that will definitely be affected by the establishment of this agency as well as these six public-private partnerships. The key questions that we should ask and that needs to be addressed is that what is the anticipated cost of this model? Of the public-private partnerships for all the 72 ports of entry, if the same standard should be applied everywhere, will this be sustainable? Should the pilot, the six areas that we've indicated, should it prove to be too expensive to replicate, what alternative models will be utilized at the remaining ports of entry? So once we realize that what we have established at these 6 points is too expensive, what alternatives will be put in place for the others? Has financial modeling been done for all the 72 ports of entry, and what are the trade-offs that have to be made? And this relates again back to what we are concerned about in terms of our capabilities in our department, not having the financial management skills required to actually do the financial modeling. What are the benefits of these partnerships, and does it outweigh the costs? So when we look at what are the benefits in terms of what we're going to get out of this whole partnership, does it really justify the cost? Does it really justify the amount of money that will be allocated? There is no doubt that the partnerships deliver state-of-the-art facilities. But the Public Service Commission suspects that the trade-off for all the other border posts were not consciously considered. Are there alternative models that were considered? Without addressing the matters listed above, it is questionable whether the establishment of the Border Management Agency will be cost-effective and efficient. Many of the problems with the current border posts will be transferred to the new agency. In conclusion, there is a need to find a balance between building a capable state and cost-cutting measures, which will require innovation to facilitate effective and efficient service delivery and performance. The foundation for this is sound strategic and performance resource plans with clear linkages to the medium-term expenditure framework and the departmental budget votes. These plans should be costed for implementation, which requires implementation of costing models, taking into consideration both human and financial resources. Assessment should be undertaken focused on the number of departments, the duplication of functions, and the top-heavy structures of service delivery departments. Proper management of public funds, which requires setting up proper accountability frameworks, aligning responsibility, authority, and accountability. Detect and prevent unauthorized, irregular, fruitful, and wasteful expenditure, and take disciplinary actions against negligent officials. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for the elaborate report. Honorable members will agree with me that it was informative, factual, and an eye-opener. So with this information, I will now open for the honorable members to reflect on this presentation and engage the commission, Public Service Commission, on their presentation. This presentation was so clear. Okay, there's Honorable Member Manana. No one was raising, you know, and then Honorable Member McLaughlin and then Honorable Member Dr. Fick, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me welcome the report. As we have indicated, it's clear, straightforward, and it's an eye-opener. I don't think we need to ask many questions or any questions because it's a straightforward report. But there's one issue I would like to raise, and I'm also concerned on page 39. It's with regards to the Department of Public Works. The question you have asked, most of the time I used to ask myself the very same question. Really, really, is the Department of Public Works have that capacity to deliver its function? Because most of the departments are complaining about the very same department. Maybe it's too loaded, you know. Sometimes we need to look at this issue of Department of Public Works. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question, Honorable Member Manana. Next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask some questions, clarity, if I may, please. Just if I look on slide 15, and slide 28, we speak of payment of suppliers within the 30 days of receipt of invoices. The bottom of slide 28 and sort of towards the top on slide 15. Then on slides 20 and 21, we
split these invoices between those invoices paid after 30 days and number of invoices older than 30 days. Now, that's basically saying the same thing in my understanding. Do we mean these invoices were paid within the 30-day period, the ones shown as yellow on page 20 and page 21? Or, if I'm not understanding it correctly, what is the correct thing? It says invoices paid after 30 days. Invoices older than 30 days not paid, I understand that those ones have gone beyond 30 days and haven't been paid. But these other ones, they should have been paid within 30 days, according to pages 15 and 28. But here we say they weren't paid within 30 days, they were paid after 30 days. Are any of them getting paid within the 30-day period? Would be my question then. Thank you, ma'am. That's all
Thank
I have for
you,
now.
Thank you, Honourable Dr. Peek.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm going to agree with my colleague behind me, Honourable Manana, saying that it is a comprehensive document. What I like about the document as well is that it's the same framework and format that we received on the last presentation, so it's easy to compare the information. What I also like about the presentation is that it's also by one presentation, one presenter, sorry. So maybe the department must take heed from this, because they come here with a 10-page presentation and each one presents 2 pages. So yeah, we had one presenter with a whole lot of different areas, and she covered it very well. So I just would like us to seriously look at that when other departments come and do presentations. And the other thing I want to talk about, just a general statement, Chair. Now, I think I made the statement when the FFC presented, but I think with this one, we need to sit as a committee on our own and take this presentation with the assistance of our researchers and decide on how to act on it, because every time we hear no consequence and nothing happens. I mean, if you look at the information given in here, and that's why I agree with Honourable Manana, it's an indictment. I mean, people are just doing as they please, they're not performing, they're not complying, and getting away with it. I mean, and again, I mean, I don't have to go through the document and say this is right and we agree. We agree. I mean, you know, at one stage I was writing down page numbers to look at where I was going to comment, and then I stopped because, I mean, every page gives us valuable information, or all the slides. Just one regarding one point I want to raise regarding the presentation itself. And again, I mean, it's the information that you have, so I'm not questioning, but I just want to make a comment. With regards to the payment of the invoices, on slide number 21 talks about the larger amounts of paid. Now, that for me is actually problematic. You might think you're doing a good job by paying larger amounts, but at the end of the day, the larger amounts are paid because, I mean, to businesses that probably can afford to carry that invoice, whereas the ones that need to be looked at are actually the smaller invoices. Those are the businesses that really need that payment within 30 days. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Okay, I would like to just add two questions on slide number 16. Slide number 16, I just want to double check. This information to us is key, but I see you don't have information on the 16/17. Is it because the annual reports are not available yet? Oh, okay. Because, yeah, all right, that is going to help us, because we're also looking at, we want to see, we left with the 2 years of the MT strategic framework. So we want to see and see, you know, if there's anything that you can do to assist there. But then also on slide number precautionary suspension, I think it's 34. I just want to know that as the commission, have you ever intervened, and what's your intervention? Because we would like to piggyback on that in terms of our recommendations. Have you intervened here? Because it will not be good enough that we have this information, but we do not look at the solution. was whether we want or not. One is tempted to call it fruitless expenditure.
Okay. I think so far that's where I would like to stop. All right, we will allow the commission to, okay. Honorable member, Shoppe Sole.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I would like to agree with my other colleagues that we always have good presentation from the commission. And for the first time, I support my best friend, Dr. Fick. You know, we don't usually agree, but today we agree 100%. And I was listening to you when you say departments are not following the framework that Treasury has developed. And I was just wondering that, you know, it is very natural that if Treasury itself cannot follow its own regulation, I doubt if other department can, because I was shocked by what I saw on the integrated financial management system. And to me, it represented nothing close to effective performance. And I would like you to delve a little deeper into that, just that item. Because I think if we can sort out treasury is our anchor for any country. A foreign direct investor, they look at the national treasury for any country, any developed and undeveloped a nation. And, you know, I think, you know, we must not play around this time. We have been downgraded to junk status. And I used to hate with a passion this, downgrading agents. What do you call them? Because they, maybe they never upgrade anybody. Yeah. But I tried to deal with my pain and asked specialists. I've consulted 3 economists. Who are these people? And the simple answer I got is that, you know, these people are very highly learned people. They use research. That is why when they have to downgrade a country, they don't just downgrade you from a distance. They come and stay around for a month or so because they want to get what you are hiding. And I am very convinced that even if we did not want to talk about it ourselves, these rating agencies did have the report of the information. Integrated finance management system. They did have it. And they pronounced, knowing that even as hypocritically as a country as we can be, but there is this. And that should have been found maybe in the commission, in your commission, or in education, or anyway, but not in treasury. So I seriously would like the commission to apply, just to focus on that, because if we can get treasury right, the confidence that we need from investors will come back. We can have everybody else right, but if treasury is found with this type of looting, corruption, mismanagement, I have a problem. Thank you.
Thank you. I will now hand over to the commission to respond.
Apologies once again to you and the honourable member for arriving late.
I will attempt a few of the comments and the questions that have arisen, and I'll come in to fill in the gap. Just first of all, we always appreciate the feedback we get from this committee when we have prepared for your good self a tool that we consider useful for the purposes of your oversight work. Starting with Honorable Manana on the issue of public works, I really believe that maybe this committee, in conjunction with other committees, a dedicated focus in this area is really required. Because some of it is not even about capability, we've discovered, because we ourselves are a victim of this very department in terms of what we have observed. Some of it is something that you can't really detect easily, because it goes to the extent where even the rates that government departments pay, the rentals, are not necessarily commercially based. So a lot of dedicated focus in this area is really required, because we believe that a lot of money from the public purse is going astray here. I'll ask Carmen to talk to the slide 15 and 28 issue that Honorable Mark Reglanes has raised. In respect of Dr. Fick and the payment of invoices, We made a recommendation in one of the many appearances we had in this committee that perhaps one of the things that measures that need to be done is that no matter what the department is appearing in front of any committee of this august house is about, they must have a slide on the breakdown on how they are doing in this area at a national level and with the legislatures at provincial level. Because a lot is happening in this space. But also what we have discovered is that only Treasury is paying, in terms of the PFMA, what is due to those who are not paid in terms of interest. Other departments are not doing that, and therefore letting down those who do work with government and almost sinking them. So that is required. But the address in terms of the area of the oversight of this committee, should all the partners who are owed insist on being paid interest, a lot of money from the public purse will be drained as a result of that. And I suspect they are not insisting because they are made vulnerable, they are being just begging to be paid what is due, never mind interest, but there is that risk. In terms of what the chairperson has raised, what interventions as the PSC have we made in the area of precautionary suspensions? We have made interventions at three areas, chairperson and the honourable members. One, we conducted a research in this area just to make us aware what is the picture. Out of that report, we had round tables with HR managers right across the public service, helping them to understand how to deal with this. To begin with, the suspension is even used wrongly. You know, even in they don't follow guidelines. As long as you want to get rid of someone, you suspend them, even though they are not going to interfere, their presence is not going to interfere with the investigation, if at all there's an investigation. But we then moved a step further. We developed a guideline for executive authorities. So we make sure that at the change of administration or even when there's been cabinet reshuffles, we engage the EAs directly because of the responsibilities they have in terms of the Public Service Act on HR matters, just to make sure that also they understand. And what we have also done is to make input to the National School of Government to prepare a module in this area, or because it is a worrying fact. On what Honourable Shoppers observations, we agree with Honourable Shoppers, and I think it's something that we should all be live to. But just one last issue that wasn't raised, which I would like to emphasize and highlight from the presentation, that issue around the PPP. That we believe that this committee really needs to have a dedicated effort of oversight here, because we've listed just one example of a new and upcoming initiative, but I think even those that are already existing in the areas of health, in correctional services, there ought to be a serious oversight as to whether there is value for money for government in the way that we have approached these PPPs. Again, we've done a research report on this, which we can share with the committee to provide areas that the committee could drill down into. But when there is an upcoming one, we have provided the guidelines for the kind of questions that the committee could ask, so that that strengthens the arm of the committee in terms of oversight. So there's just one example, but we want to believe across the system there's reason wherever these exist. The last time we checked, there was a unit in Treasury that oversees PPPs. Perhaps the committee could just call that unit to appear before it to get an understanding and a scale of these PPPs and drill down to value for money for the public service in that area. Thank you. Carmen, you want to just fill in the gap?
I see the honourable member has left. Just in terms of the payment of the invoices, the reality is that we are focusing on the ones that are not complying. So the emphasis is on trying to track the invoices not being paid within the prescribed time. But as I indicated during my presentation, DPME has got a dedicated component. I did indicate that it was also presented in our November the 8th presentation. The exact name of that unit within DPME who is responsible for this. I'm sure through them and National Treasury, I mean, they should have some indication, but in terms of the reports that we are receiving from them, we are basically just getting the ones that have been paid just after 30 days and the ones that have not been paid after 30 days. So the emphasis is on the ones that are not complying and not really the ones that are complying. In terms of the whole issue for National Treasury, I think also the main reason why we are seeing the results in the MPAT is because of the change of that function. Initially, National Treasury was responsible for oversight over the development of strategic plans and annual performance plans, and that has been changed, which also led to the change in the name of the Department of DPME, no longer performance, but rather planning, monitoring, and evaluation. And they have taken over that function, and I think the emphasis of oversight is a little bit different, where National Treasury focused on making sure that the budget is aligned with the MTE, MTSF and the MTEF. Now DPME is focusing on the indicators, the strategic objectives being developed. So the balance is a little bit skew in terms of what the emphases are, because I don't think that DPME is really focusing so much on making sure that the alignment in terms of the money and the indicators are there. And that is something that has been happening over the last 2 years. The change happened over the last 2 years.
also in terms of what the Honourable Member is saying, that even National Treasury that have developed these guidelines, if you look at the latest MPAT results, they are also only partially complying with the development of their strategic plan and their annual performance plan. So it's definitely something that one should take up with them in terms of why that is. I'm not sure if we should, through my commissioner, request that information from DPME in terms of trying to figure out, do they at least look at the amount of invoices that have been paid on time, or So my commissioner suggests that they can maybe come present a better picture, because they would have all the required information. We would have to request the information first from them and then do analysis and then present. I think they would be in a better position to provide a more comprehensive presentation to the committee.
you, Honourable Chair. In terms of the pool of resources, as indicated in the presentation, the biggest challenge of for national departments is specifically the retention of persons with the required skills and competencies. And the reason why we, in our discussion document, actually propose this is for just a quicker turnaround time of filling these posts again and making sure that you actually have the relevant people, as indicated there, that has the required skills, the required competencies, because people that are placed in this pool have been tested and we know that they can actually deliver on the scope of work. So it's just to speed up the processes and making sure that the departments actually have a better turnaround time in terms of filling those vacancies of specifically the critical post identified. In terms of the service delivery improvement plan, this is a requirement for all departments. And I think it's about, again, it is linked to the strategic management requirement as also presented that we need to put in place. We know how to develop the strategic plan, but our problem is to really translate it into actionable plans and also knowing what it is that we want to achieve. What is our standard? If I know what the standard is to what I'm working towards, it's easier when it comes to performance management. It is difficult to actually say whether it has been effective. This is something that is measured by the Department of Public Service and Administration. I'm sure that they would have some indication in terms of it, but the big problem is that it's difficult to measure whether the charters that should be in place will is actually useful, because most of the departments have not actually done it. They do develop the service delivery improvement plan to make sure that they tick it off as a compliance, and it's something that is a requirement in the impact for DPME as well. So in terms of scoring of governance, they make sure that that is in place. But is it actually something that is defining what can a citizen expect from a certain service delivery department? So it's making sure that those things are translated into simple language so that people understand, when I get to Department X, what is my expectations? And if I don't get this, where do I go to make sure that my my complaint is basically addressed? That is the reason why we've highlighted that area. And it again goes back to how I then improve my performance, because it is part of performance information, and that cycle process where we indicated that whatever I produce and however I implement those measures that I've put in place, it will inform my service delivery improvement for the next year. In terms of the consultation with the DPSA, in terms of the structures, this was something that was highlighted in the impact results. It was also highlighted in the progress report for outcome 12. Exactly which departments, Honourable Chair, we are not 100% sure. We don't have that information. That is also the information that is available from the DPSA in terms of who are those departments that have those problems. But we just know that in these two resources, this was definitely highlighted as a concern, and when we looked at it, we felt that it is important to bring to this committee, because it will definitely have an impact going forward on the headcount, as also highlighted in Foresight. In terms of the non-critical post or critical post, the challenge, Honourable Chair, is that in some cases, administrative and support function posts are not necessarily seen as critical posts. So critical posts, especially in a service delivery department, is seen as those core functions in terms of whether it's a hospital, whether it's Department of Education. The emphasis is different. But when we look at our the audit outcome findings, it's actually that we need more administrative people with the required skills. So in terms of financial management, strategic management, those are generally not seen as critical posts within the department. So that's why we are seeing
these the impact, because when we need to make a decision in terms of this is my vacancy and I'm having a bigger vacancy rate in terms of my, what is seen as my core function, the posts that are pushed aside is generally the administrative posts, and the administrative post is more those people responsible for financial management, strategic planning, and even the development of service delivery improvement plans.
Just a quick one on the DPSA approval. At one point, there was a problem with the backlog of approvals, such that some departments would go ahead because they've been waiting so long to have that approval. But that has been dealt with. But there was, in the last three financial years, that problem of that backlog. So that was used as an excuse sometimes. But that gap has since been closed now.
In terms of the agenda, I'm going to them. I'll give a member to the party in the place, so I'll allow the commission to not have a meeting. And then the time is going to be there. It's not a lot, but the commission will be there.
About your birthdays, and indeed it would be nice to acknowledge and issue a happy birthday. So if members have got an announcement, please remind us from here. Otherwise, from the top table, I'd like to inform the meeting that the management committee has identified a need for the urgent meeting with the National Treasury to do oversight over spending and governance controls over the integrated financial management system. Now, the proposed, because it's a matter that needs our urgent attention, so the proposed date is on Thursday after the sitting. So, which will be, is it the 6th? But at least the safest is after the meeting, 6 o'clock, so we convene as a committee to meet with this, with National Treasury. So this will be in addition to the 4 that we've identified as priority departments for the appropriation teams. Okay. Number 2. Thursday at 6. Yeah, this week at 6. And we really would like members to attend. It's a matter of national importance. Okay, and then I would also, the other announcement, we would like the
the secretariat to write to the department, not to the department, to the committees of the four departments that we have identified and request for their reports and circulate those reports to members in preparation for. Does it make sense? Did you say now we will stop working in isolation or in, there's another nice word for it, you work in silos, yeah, and then work with other committees. So this is how I propose we work with other committees, by taking their work and then looking at their recommendations, the report and recommendations, because we might find things there that we need to raise also. Or we strengthen their recommendation, instead of coming with new recommendations, we strengthen, we look, align our recommendations with theirs, but where there is a need to add, then we add. And then in the next meetings and announcement, we will also get a report from the public hearings for members to just look at it and satisfy themselves. But also the management is also proposing that for all those issues that have no relevance with the appropriation but were raised at that community meeting, we must find a way of, for instance, on the TRC, find a way of referring that to the petitions committee to investigate. And then on all the other issues that have no relevance to the appropriation bill, we refer to the departments for consideration by those departments. And if those departments, after we've referred, this happen to come and appear before us, we will also make a follow-up on what have they done. For instance, you remember houses, shacks. And if it's a local government issue, we will also refer it to the relevant local government and request them to give us a progress report. Because we are saying we are public reps, and whether we want or not, when we go out, we will also pick up on other issues that need government attention. And fortunately, we deal with all the departments. So we can then, I think, refer those issues to them. But I want to believe that that work will come here, so that you also see which issues were referred to what department and this one, because it is the members, it will be in the members' interest. Those are the announcements. So are there no other announcements? Nothing. Announcements, researcher? Nothing. Okay. We have asked the researchers to help us to identify places for our site. What do we call it? Site oversight visit. Yeah? Another place for oversight visit. But also we are looking at identifying stakeholders, but not today, for future, that we sit with around the table now. You see, at that level where we were at a grassroots level. But then there are people who at a middle and top level who can come also and meet with us, and we engage on the appropriation bill, a round table with the committee. So all those things are things that we're thinking of, and then preparing it so that you're not taken by surprise. So we're still processing. I think that is it. Now, on correspondence, you remember we received a request from a student who wanted to, a PhD student wanted to interview committee members. Now, when I followed up, Zandi told me that no member confirmed availability. So we need to close this matter, because we can't leave this person waiting for us forever and ever. I am available, but if there's any member after reflecting on this and you think you're available, you can then please inform Darren, the secretariat, so that then those names can be sent there, and this person must say whether he wants to, or if it doesn't work, it's okay. But we need to give a feedback. We need to give a feedback. But you must remember, we'll also appear in the thesis. So the thesis, I promise you, they become source documents at the university. So imagine appearing in a doctorate thesis, you know. We need to leave a legacy. It can be helpful, it's a legacy, you know. You must see those opportunities and take advantage of them. Well, that's it. Any other correspondence? At a management level, we also spoke about an instrument that you can use, né, to interrogate the fourth quarter report. So it will be that instrument will be circulated in the to members, still being fine-tuned, refined, then to be circulated to members. I think it is, because remember we said we want to make an impact. We don't want a lot of narrative now. Now we want figures, one impact. Projects, well, how many projects have you, you know, in this 3 year, the MTF, previous MTF, because now we're getting into the last, you know, on our last leg of the MTFS. MTFS. Yeah, MTFS. Yeah, MTFS. Yeah, okay. All right, I think those are the announcements. And then if there's no further announcements and correspondence, I will then move to item number 6. And request the whip to close, to give us closing remarks. Request that you give us closing remarks. You must not forget to congratulate us for finishing early.
Yeah, that's what I was about to start with.
It doesn't the nature of this engagement. Yeah, thanks. Over to
No, it's just to thank the members for their attendance and participation in the meeting. And hope that we really are going to, we are looking forward to the instrument, Jefferson, you are talking about, because the turn of events are suggesting that there is something that we are not doing right as a committee in terms of focusing our attention on the expenditure of departments and try and close the loopholes where we identify them. The events of the last few days suggest to us that we should have done better. And not only because it's National Treasury that is in the picture now, but for all other departments. So we need to really tighten our focus on the budget expenditure and outcomes per line function. Or rather, per line item of the department that we call to oversee. So I would like to plead with the committee that we really cut the lot of talk that we hear from the department of nice, very nice stories and really cut to the chase that we are supposed to. Because at the end of the day, Parliament will only rise to the occasion because this committee does its work sharply. And that's what I would like to plead, and that's how I would like us to close this meeting and hope that this instrument is going to come back to us. In fact, it would be nice if members also reflect and jot down a few points and contribute to what the content advisor and the researchers are going to be working on, so that we tighten our work. Thank you very much.
I need the date.
Huh?
The date of the date of that document. 16th of May. Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
And it will also give you the money allocated just for infrastructure in that department. Please. And then when they come, we also want to break down a plan. Are you listening to researcher? Yes? Researcher and our advisor? A breakdown of that. We asked for them to give us their plan. Infrastructure is going to create jobs and it's going to reduce poverty and they close the gap. I think you are called, that's why we ask for the commission, which we have not received. Is it true that we have not received? Because we don't see all the questions. Yeah, okay. If we have received information on human settlement, we can validate that information. But we need to interrupt them. And then, so I start, you can recommend that comment. You can use it on an app. Just to get another comment and look at it. You can, if you have this, that's it. You can see the very much. Circulate the draft. Next year, if we have not, but if you give members an idea, because we really want to make it. We only have 2 years. We have 2 years and we have 3 years. So we must be able to push it so that the goals of this 5 years, at least, they are achieved, if not achieved, these people push to 90% of the goals because come end of 2019, that's the end of the 5 years. Should have achieved on the transfer in that 5 years. Okay, thank you very much. I thought I should say, give you this wisdom.
Chairperson,
yes, ma'am?
I want to congratulate you on your passion for your work.
What?
I will copy from you.
What?
Your passion for your work.
Okay, thank you.
It's very good. But I'm not as strong as you are. But I will copy.
Imagine if I was not surrounded by you. I was talking to you. And now I'm talking by two people. So I have no choice. I have to run in the bathroom. Thank you. Continue doing the good work.
Yeah.
But we must meet this treasury at night.
Ma?
This treasury.
Mm.
I will eat vitamins on that day. I want to be
able to. But remember, our role...
Vitamin A and
not
just for sake. That is exactly what me and my friend Steve will do.
I can see.